Good evening, everyone. I'm Lynn Ormoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization is urging countries to start taxing sugary beverages as they fight against an obesity epidemic. The UN Health Agency says increase in price hikes can proportionally reduce consumption. For example, a 20% price hike leads to a cut in consumption by 20%. The WHO says in 2014, 39% of adults globally were overweight. Last year, 42 million children under the age of 5 were overweight or obese, an increase of about 11 million in 15 years. We will discuss the issue on this World Obesity Day, October 11th. And our guest today is Dr. Francesco Branca. He's the World Health Organization's Director of Nutrition for Health. And Dr. Branca will join us in a moment. Let me remind our listeners, if you'd like to participate in the show, you can email us your questions or comments at healthchat@voanews.com or post them on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And we will have our discussion with Dr. Branca in a moment. But first, VOA's Lisa Schlein takes a look at WHO's latest report in addressing obesity.
A new report finds more than one-third of adults around the world was overweight and 500 million were obese in 2014. More troubling, the World Health Organization estimates 42 million children under age 5 were overweight or obese last year. This represents an increase of about 11 million during the past 15 years. Nearly half of these children live in Asia and 25% in Africa. The UN agency says unhealthy diets are behind the rise in diabetes, which now accounts for more than 422 million cases and an estimated 1.5 million deaths a year. It says the consumption of sugar, including products like sugary drinks, is a major factor in the global increase of obesity and diabetes. Temo Vaca-Nivolu is the coordinator for WHO's Department for the Prevention on Noncommunicable Diseases. He tells VOA putting a tax on sugary drinks would reduce consumption and save lives.
If we increase the tax and that gets passed on to the consumers, resulting in a 20% increase in price, you are more likely to get, when I say proportional, a 20% reduction in the consumption. In addition, you will be more likely to achieve the ultimate health outcome we are aiming for, which is the reduction in obesity and diabetes.
Vaca-Nivolu says Mexico, which increased sugary drinks by 10% in 2014, had a 6% reduction in consumption by the end of the year. Among poor people, that number decreased by 17%. The WHO report says China tops the worldwide obesity rankings in terms of numbers, with 43 million men and 46 million women. The United States, which has been bumped into second place, has 41.7 million men and 46 million women who are obese. The WHO recommends people keep their sugar intake to below 10% of their total energy needs and reduce it to less than 5% for additional health benefits. It warns people to be careful in their calculations because sugar is everywhere. For example, one tablespoon of ketchup contains one teaspoon of sugar, and an average cup of breakfast cereal contains about 4 teaspoons of sugar. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And our guest today is Dr. Francesco Branca. He's the World Health Organization's Director of Nutrition for Health. Dr. Branca, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. So in the report earlier, we heard a comment that you made about the issue of how sugar is affecting people's weight. And the WHO is urging countries to start taxing sugary beverages to help fight obesity. So would you share with us one or two evidence-based studies that support this recommendation?
Sure. I think you heard the study in Mexico, but we also have new evidence coming from Hungary, for example. Okay. Hungary has, in fact, introduced taxation not only on beverages, but also on food. And they've seen that the foods that are considered healthier from the taxation point of view actually increase their consumption, whereas the other foods decrease their consumption. And also industry is motivated to change the formulation of foods and to produce better food. We are going to see some interesting data from Chile, for example, which has already started the introduction of this new taxation. So we have about 9 countries that have now done this, and they are giving us very interesting data to analyze.
So is the idea the fact that the food or the beverage costs more than will discourage people to purchase them?
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, this is an element, clearly, of the choice. So the other aspects are also important. So that's why these policies need to be implemented together with other policies. For example, the availability in public institutions. I mean, if you go to a school and the sugar-sweetened beverages are removed, that is, first of all, a good message for the children who are not going to consume it as much, but also a message to the market because the demand will go down. So taxation together with availability of food in public institution, together, for example, with a good message on the labels to indicate that those products should be consumed sparingly. I mean, this combination of factors can be extremely impactful on levels of consumption, which at the moment are extremely worrying and on the increase.
Now, Dr. Branca, when we look at this issue of good food versus bad food, it seems, at least in some areas, that better food are costly. So how do we encourage companies to produce better food but then keep the cost at a reasonable price?
Yeah, that's an interesting analysis to do, but often price of certain elements are low because there have been subsidies, for example, at the level of production. I mean, the cost of certain production is certain items is very low because there's been investment in research and development. It's been subsidies from government, and that's why we can keep prices low. So it's not only the industry, but it's also the somehow the whole food system that has to provide support to the production of healthy food. I mean, the investment we're doing in cereal production is extremely high, whereas the investment which is done in horticulture, for example, is low. So changing a bit the structure of the subsidies and changing the investments in the whole value chains can shape differently the cost of the foods and also facilitate the consumption of all the healthier foods and the healthier diets compared to what we have now.
Now, is it accurate to say that there is a growing trend when it comes to obesity in the world?
Oh, yes, indeed. And today we are highlighting with this World Obesity Day the severity of the situation. We have estimated that in the world we have more than 600 million adults who are obese, which is the most pronounced form of excess weight. And this is 266 million men and 375 million women. But if you look at children under 5, they are 42 million. And these numbers have been increasing constantly. And in fact, particularly in the last 10 years, the increase has been much faster than in the past. And it has affected some parts of the world where we didn't see the problem before. I mean, we have more and more people in the Middle East, more and more people in North Africa, more and more people in South Africa. So even Sub-Saharan Africa now is starting to become a problem. In Sub-Saharan Africa, it's terrible because you see at the same time people with undernutrition and people with overweight, so what we call the double burden of malnutrition.
Yeah, it's really interesting, if I can use that word, to see that paradox, which is in Sub-Saharan Africa, where some people are really lacking basic food and others are overweight. So why are we seeing this increase in obesity?
We see this because of changes in the food system. The food system is actually not meeting the population needs. So you have easier access to foods which are rich in energy, and particularly energy coming from sugars and fat, and poor in vitamins and minerals. So our food system are providing cheaper food of the lower quality, but and that is it is associated to an increased consumption, more than what we really need. And the fact that we've clearly also changed our lifestyles, so we don't necessarily have energy demanding jobs, and we use our leisure time in a non-active way, so in a sedentary way. These are all contributing factors. And you know, Africa is also not different. I mean, you have this unfortunately increased changes in the food system with an increased availability, particularly in Africa. You can see it particularly in urban areas, and then you know, with increased sedentarity, the Western food style is seen as a status symbol. So people like these new habits, and they're very much encouraged by marketing, very much encouraged by the fast food chains that we're seeing in an increased fashion. I mean, if you see a situation like China, you can portray what's going to happen to Africa in the next 10 years if policies are not put in place to curb this trend.
So are these reasons similar when it comes to obesity in children, or are we seeing something different?
No, these are very similar circumstances. In addition, I think in children there's another aspect in the fact that if children were exclusively breastfed, the risk of obesity would be much lower. So unfortunately, we have only about a bit more than a child in three, which is exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months. Mm-hmm. This is a disaster. I mean, this is clearly, you know, the best way to feed a child in the first 6 months of life. And also, after the first 6 months of life, we see already a food environment which is too rich in energy and sugar. So you have an oversweetened diet for young children after 6 months, and that is also conducive to obesity.
But have you noticed, or perhaps is there an observation in terms of any correlations between, let's say, income levels, ethnicity, culture, when it comes to childhood weight problems?
Yeah, you have different parts of the world with different correlation. But yes, indeed, the social socioeconomic background is a determinant. When you look at Europe or the United States, the lower the socioeconomic groups, meaning income, education, also the neighborhood where you live, you know, people with the lower socioeconomic status have a much greater rate of obesity, and in some cases it's sometimes you know, up to three times higher than the high socioeconomic group in the same country. In low-income countries, it's slightly different. So you have you know, the overweight is more in adults, it's more in urban areas, and it's more among wealthier people. Mm-hmm. So there is a, you know, a difference there. But clearly, the socioeconomic background, which means access to food, access to the good quality food, which means information, education, which means income and access to healthcare. These are all factors that are related to differences in the prevalence of obesity.
Okay, what about when we look at these issues? What is more likely to be the cause of obesity? If we want to talk about DNA, poor diet and nutrition, or lack of exercise?
Oh, no, the genetics is important. So people are different, and you know, if you have an obese parent, you're more likely to get an obesity. But it's a relatively smaller determinant. And if you see at the epidemic of obesity, that has really occurred in the last 20 years, and this is not something that can be attributable to differences in genetics. So it's in a sense within this last generation that we have seen this big increase. So clearly, it's related to the environment. Now, is it more diet or more physical activity? It's a combination of the two. But it's very difficult to keep the energy balance if you consume a high energy density foods. I mean, if you really, and also it's the choice of your time. I mean, if you really want to keep energy balance, you should at least have 1 hour per day of active time, whether it's sport or whether it's work. And you know, many of us are finding very difficult to that to have that 1 hour. So it's a combination of the two. But I think if we don't start very early in life with that right balance of good food and active life, we're not going to be able to address this problem.
Okay, Dr. Branca, we are going to take a very short break and continue our discussion, so please stick around. And we'll continue our discussion of obesity with Dr. Francesco Branca of the WHO. But first, a brief summary of the latest health news with Eva Yuma.
The World Health Organization warns that 92% of the world's population lives in areas of high air pollution. Diesel cars are seen as the main culprit of urban air pollution. Many cities in Europe have pledged to phase out diesel cars, and there's hope that sales of electric vehicles could take over as battery life improves. Experts say electric cars could offer the solution to urban air pollution, with the condition that the electricity is generated using renewable energy. And U.S. scientists claim that human lifespans may be limited to a maximum of about 115 years. Their conclusions, published in the journal Nature, were made by analyzing decades of data on human longevity. They say a rare few may live longer, but the odds are very poor. But while some scientists have praised the study, others have strongly disagreed. Life expectancy has been increasing relentlessly since the 19th century due to vaccines, safer childbirth, and tackling killers like cancer and heart disease. And that's a wrap-up of the latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing obesity with our guest, Dr. Francesco Branca, WHO's Director of Nutrition for Health. Dr. Branca, we have Abdul in Sierra Leone who's asking, what is the difference between being overweight and obese?
Okay, so we calculate nutritional status of an individual by linking the weight and the height. And we calculate what is called the body mass index. And then say that if you have a body mass index, which is between 18.5 and 25, you are a normal individual. So you have no concern with your weight. If your body mass index goes beyond 25, then you're starting to be overweight. And you know, this is a very common condition that unfortunately affects over a billion and a half, actually, people in the world. And you already start to have some health problems with that, overweight. Then you continue, if you increase your weight further and go beyond 30 kilograms per square meters, which is the way we calculate the body mass index, then you are considered obese. Okay. But then there are, unfortunately, other levels. I mean, we have seen that we have more and more individuals with a body mass index beyond 40, and that's morbid obesity. And, you know, the more you increase your body weight compared to your height, the greater the risk of having a number of conditions, heart disease, certain cancers, disabilities in movement, osteoarticular problem, including also infertility and problems of reproduction.
Okay, and is there a difference in? I know you gave us what the body mass index is and how it's calculated, but is there a difference in how to calculate it for adults versus children, men versus women?
You don't have a difference between men versus women. It's exactly the same number. Okay. But you do have a slightly more complicated way to calculate it for children. In children, it varies according to the age. So there are tables that doctors have to indicate what the body mass index for ages. So for anybody up to the age of 18, you have this different way to calculate the overweight and the obesity.
Now, Lisa in Ghana has this question. What about fruit juices that are sweet? Are they bad for the weight?
Well, fruit juices are not different from the other sugar sweetened beverages. So, because when you squeeze the fruit, you remove the free sugars from the context of the plant cell wall, and then you throw away the fiber, and you throw away a number of other important nutrients. So when you squeeze the fruit, unfortunately, you keep only the sugar, and you know a few other good things. But in general terms, the fruit juices have the same effect on, for example, insulin levels that other sugar-sweetened beverages. So unfortunately, even fruit juices have to be consumed with the same moderation as other sugar-sweetened beverages. But the fruit is fine. So the fruit and the milk are not included in you know, what we're trying to discourage.
So are there some combination of food that can increase the risk of weight gain?
Well, certainly if we have food that are high in sugar and fat, then you consume small amounts and you more easily get overweight. So that is, the type of food we have to be concerned with. So, you know, a very rich food such as an ice cream or, you know, piece of cake which has, you know, is made with butter, with sugar, that clearly, you know, is high energy density and easy if you, even if you get a little bit, and you easily go beyond your energy requirement. Whereas other foods, for example, the fruit and the vegetables, which are more bulky and allow your sense of satiation to come forward, you know, are protective. So everything is about control of appetite and is about meeting your needs and not going beyond your needs. As soon as you go beyond your energy needs and you do it systematically, then your weight is starting to increase.
Okay. And Rose has this question from London. She says, how many pounds or kilos are healthy to lose when in diet, are healthy to lose per week or per month when in a diet?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, diets should not be very drastic, because if you start losing weight too quickly, then your body is going to use more of the lean mass, of the fat-free mass. I mean, our body never burns only fat. It always burns a mixture. If you lose weight too quickly, you tend to also get rid, you know, mistakenly, but of the lean mass. So, you know, roughly speaking, you should never go below a diet of, you know, for if you are an average adult of 1,000 calories per day, because if you start doing that, then your risk of using your fat-free mass is higher. So, which corresponds to basically losing about a kilo per week. A kilo per week is reasonably safe.
So, when you mentioned calories, is there a way to keep up? How do you know how many calories you're consuming if you don't have food, if you don't have like the notice on the package, for example? You know, sometimes you go to the market for in Africa, a lot of times people go to the market and purchase ingredients separately and come and cook. How do you know the calorific value of the food you're cooking if you don't have the information?
Well, yes. On the one hand, it's important to have, if you buy packaged food, to have good labels. And I think in some parts of the world, particularly in Africa, this is not yet very popular, very well done. So
yes.
You know, we definitely need better labeling of food.
Mm-hmm.
But people need to have some general information about the type of food that they are eating and they are cooking. So some, you know, general nutrition information and education needs to be provided to the people. Mm-hmm. But I think what is important is that even if we don't know the numbers, having a good, healthy diet, which is based on the use of plant food, mm-hmm. and is based on the, so consumption of fruit and vegetable, it doesn't contain too much fat, doesn't contain a lot of salt, and doesn't use sugar. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you use some general principles of a healthy diet, which often you find in dietary guidelines that each country or most countries have developed, that's a good way to eat. And, you know, keeping overall a good diet, keeping overall active, those are good ways to control, even if you don't have the specific right numbers. Of course, if you're doing a diet, mm-hmm. you're under, for example, control from a physician, you'll be asked to document and write down some numbers. But that's not absolutely necessary. What we need to be able to do is have a good healthy diet, which we enjoy, based on our culture, which we eat together with other people. Better to have a diet which we cook, because usually that's a better diet than what we eat outside in a restaurant or buy in a supermarket ready-made. And so if we just follow some general principles, that's a good way to handle our weight.
Mm-hmm. Now, if food can cause weight gain, I know you just gave us some good principles there. If food can cause weight gain, how should we think of food as a booster to lose weight once somebody is already overweight, perhaps?
Well, clearly, in certain forms of overweight, when overweight has been there for a long time or when it's very pronounced, diets can be difficult, but they're not impossible. The important thing is what we have noticed, that if you do a diet and you stick to it, let's say for 1 year, 2 years, and then you tend to forget about it, then you may go back to the original situation. But persistence is very important. I mean, several studies have demonstrated that if you start going beyond 2 years of Lent, then you start changing your habits, and then you keep your body weight. So I think persistence is absolutely important. You know, it's a long-term project, having reducing your weight. And if you don't manage that, of course, there are medical ways to handle obesity, but they are costly. They are somehow certainly costly for the health sector, mm-hmm. somehow risky for health. So prevention and trying to manage yourself with a good diet, your body weight, are certainly better options.
And finally, before we end, perhaps Dr. Branca, you can give us some tips, one or two tips in terms of what we need when we eat or what to avoid quickly to maintain a good and healthy diet on a daily basis.
Daily use, start with your fruit and vegetables, at least 5 portions per day, perhaps 3 of vegetables and 2 of fruit. Then have your main staple, which could be wholemeal cereals. It could be rice. It could be bread or pasta. But then add some portion of animal source food, maybe, if you like to do that, but not exceeding for example, one portion of dairy or one portion of fish, and perhaps the meat even more sparingly, mm-hmm. And then avoid the sugar sweetened beverages. Just use water, and then keep your consumption of other sugary foods very sparingly. So do it maybe once a week. Okay. I think these are simple rules.
Okay, Dr. Francesco Branca, thank you so much for joining us today.
Have a good day.
Have a good
Bye.
One. And that was Dr. Francesco Branca, WHO's Director of Nutrition for Health. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Jackson Vongani and Eva Yuma for The News. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.